what I'm trying to express isn't just like the transness of these kids and giving them a chance to talk about what it means to be trans, but what it feels like also to be a person and a human in this moment. I feel like they never get to do that, to express their own humanity. Rather than just like talking about them, I talk to them and I talk to their families about their lives. Her state had recently introduced a bill. It would have branded parents of trans kids as child abusers if they allow their kids to transition. Don't we just want them to have great lives?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. New Zealand unveils its first queer-inclusive census, Toyota puts the brakes on DEI policies, and Nico Lang studies trans-American teenagers in their natural habitats. Those stories and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Ava Davis.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending October 12, 2024. About 1 in 20 Kiwis came out as queer for the New Zealand 2023 census, the first in history to seek them. Statistics New Zealand counts more than 172,000 people who identified as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, non-binary, or intersex. That constitutes 4.9% of the adult population. A category for other minority genders or sexual identities was included in that number. The information was released in early October. The highest actual number of rainbow people live in Auckland, where they make up 4.9% of the population, the national average. However, Wellington beats Auckland as the country's queerest city, with some 11.3% of its residents identifying as LGBTQIA+. Dunedin came in second at 7.3%. Christchurch, Palmerston North, and Hamilton followed, with 6 to about 5.5% each. Wellington's top spot came as no surprise to Tabby Bisley of the LGBTQ+ advocacy group Inside Out. She told the New Zealand Herald, "Wellington has a long history of being a supportive city for rainbow communities, where people from other parts of the country often move to have an easier life where they are accepted." Bisexuals made up 54% of the queers tallied by the census. 30% said that they were gay or lesbian. About 0.7% of the population said that they were transgender. 0.4% identified as intersex, and about the same percentage said they were non-binary. Inside Out's Bisley has a word of caution about the New Zealand 2023 census. Remember that it could only count people who were willing to identify as queer. Bisley warns, "It's definitely important that we don't take it as a fully accurate picture."
The Toyota Motor Corporation is the latest company in the U.S. to backpedal on its diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. The carmaker earned a perfect 100% score on the Human Rights Campaign's 2023 Corporate Equity Index. No more. Toyota is withdrawing its participation in that and all such corporate surveys, according to an internal memo obtained by Bloomberg. The October 3rd message to 50,000 Texas-based employees and some 1,500 Toyota dealerships halts sponsorships of LGBTQ+ events. Instead, it says the company will narrow its community activities to align with STEM education and workforce readiness. Social media campaigns against so-called woke companies in the U.S. are the specialty of Tennessee-based far-right demagogue Robbie Starbuck. A Toyota spokesperson nevertheless denied that Starbuck's recent attacks had anything to do with the company's decision to abandon its queer-inclusive workplace diversity policies. Toyota joins a list of corporations willing to disregard their queer and allied employees and customers. Fellow carmaker Ford, motorcycle maker Harley-Davidson, toolmaker Stanley Black & Decker, whiskey distiller Jack Daniels, and farm and home equipment retailers Tractor Supply and John Deere have all bailed. Running away from programs that promote LGBTQ plus inclusive workplace diversity may turn out to be short-sighted, however. Research conducted by the Human Rights Campaign and GLAAD have each found that more than 2 in 3 U.S. consumers are more likely to buy products from companies that support LGBTQ equality. Even more would boycott companies that don't. More than half of that group also said that they would use social media to urge other people to boycott.
Denver, Colorado's Masterpiece Cake Shop is embroiled in another anti-LGBTQ discrimination case. This time, right-wing Christian baker Jack Phillips saw his appeal of lower court rulings against him rejected by the state Supreme Court. Phillips had been found guilty of discriminating against trans attorney Autumn Scardina. He had refused to create a pink-colored cake with blue frosting to officially celebrate her gender transition. Scardina ordered her cake while Phillips's original notorious Masterpiece Cake Shop case was in progress. The U.S. Supreme Court ultimately backed Phillips's right to refuse to bake a wedding cake for a gay couple in 2018. The October 8th State High Court majority's decision was essentially based on procedural grounds. They decided 6-3 only that Scardina had not pursued other legal avenues for redress before filing her lawsuit. As Justice Melissa Hart wrote for the majority, "We express no view on the merits of these claims." The three justices in the minority called the majority's ruling a procedural pass. They emphasized that every judicial officer in the state who has heard the case has decided that the baker violated the Colorado Anti-Discrimination Act. Scardina's lawyer, John McHugh, agreed. He said, "The Colorado Supreme Court decided to avoid the merits of this issue by inventing an argument no party raised." Neither side was happy. Phillips is represented by Jake Warner of the notoriously anti-queer legal group Alliance Defending Freedom. Warner had argued that his client's free speech rights were at stake. Scardina's side countered that she had not requested any writing on the cake, so the case was not really about freedom of speech. It's not clear what happens next.
Transvestitism, transgenderism, the LGBTQ movement in the country is of the devil.
Period.
So the devil.
Jason Lakebert is a Christian nationalist Republican politician in Arkansas. The former state senator was appointed to the state library board by far-right Republican Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders in November 2023. The board oversees the leadership and development of Arkansas's public libraries. Most importantly, it handles the purse strings. Lakebert started his tenure by vowing to enforce the state's anti-queer book bans. He calls all LGBTQ-related materials harmful to minors. Furthermore, he said that he'd push to withhold funding from any library that challenges those laws in court. Lakebert catapulted to nationwide notoriety with a recent rant at a church that Right-Wing Watch made sure got to the social media platform formerly known as Twitter.
So you don't need to be supporting people and voting for people that do things of the devil.
That's right.
There's no way a real Christian can do that. I don't know if you're live streaming this or not. I'm telling all of you today, you cannot be a Christian and vote for people that do the devil's work.
That's right.
You can't do it.
Pray for Arkansas State Library Board member Jason Lakebert.
Finally, U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris, the Democratic Party's nominee for president, spent a few whirlwind days this week being interviewed on several influential media platforms, including the top-rated Call Her Daddy podcast. Harris touted her pro-queer credentials going back to the early 2000s with Howard Stern on his Sirius XM radio show. Stern brought up the tenuous status of LGBTQ rights under the current U.S. Supreme Court.
Here's what I worry about. You got a guy who says, hey, we're not stopping here. You know gay rights are next. You
Clarence
know it.
Thomas said it.
Yep. Who doesn't have gay people in their life?
We actually had laws that were treating people based on their sexual orientation differently. We were basically saying that you are a second-class citizen under the law. The court that Donald Trump created, that
insanity.
Is openly talking about what else could be at risk.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending October 12th, 2024. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazor, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Ava Davis. Stay healthy.
And I'm John Dyer V. Stay safe. Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Jared Brown talks about common sense, but Brown voted multiple times to allow transgender biological males to participate in girls' sports. Brown supported allowing minor children to receive sex change surgeries.
All Red demanded that taxpayers pay for sex change operations in the military, even on kids. That's not the America that I fought for.
Kamala's agenda is they, them, not you.
I'm Donald J. Trump, and I approve this message.
Lies about transgender youth are boosting the Republican presidential and down-ballot campaigns in the United States. But who are trans teens really? How much do they have in common with their cisgender peers? Whether your teenage years are behind you or you're smack in the middle of them, three things are true regardless of your gender. It's a time of big changes. It's a time when your personal changes can change the world of the future. And it's a time when love and support can make the difference between thriving and failure. If you're a teenager now, there's a new book about you. If you're looking back at being a teenager, This Way Out's Danielle Huicius found tips in it for adults who want to help somebody who's going through it.
Nico Lange is an award-winning journalist whose coverage of LGBTQ+ people is featured in The Advocate, Esquire, and so many other publications. They just released their new book, American Teenager: How Trans Kids Are Surviving Hate and Finding Joy in a Turbulent Era. It tells the stories of eight trans and non-binary teenagers across the country, from California to West Virginia to Florida. The book follows their joys and their struggles, encompassing the authenticity of what growing up trans in America really feels like. It's incredibly moving, and it's out now. We sat down with Nico Lange to talk about American Teenager and start off at the very beginning, the inspiration for the book's title.
That was sort of, I guess, a gift from God in a way, because I'd gone through a lot of different titles for the book, and they were all terrible. One of them that I proposed to my husband was The Trans Kids Are All Right, which is just awful. I didn't know what to call it because I didn't know how to sum up the enormity of this book and what I was trying to accomplish in like such a simple phrase. Like, it seems like it would be easy to do, but actually it's like impossible. And then one day I was sitting in the car and American Teenager by Ethel Kane came on the radio, which is a song that I was already familiar with and really liked. It sort of struck me that I've always loved in romantic comedies when they name the movie after a song, like Pretty Woman takes its cue from the song Pretty Woman, and then they used it sort of as the theme music for the movie. And I always think that's such a fun thing to do because it kind of sends the audience in with a certain mood, right? It gives it a certain like joie de vivre. And with this book, it has such a different tone than you would expect from a book like this, because it's like, it's funny. It's like, you know, it's heartbreaking, but it's also like joyous and idiosyncratic. And it's like interesting. And these kids don't always say what you think they're going to. So I love the idea of bringing the audience in just on like a different tone than you would expect and sort of like setting the mood in the way I wanted to. So like American Teenager ended up being perfect for that way. And it also expresses the universality, I think, of a project like this, that what I'm trying to express isn't just like the transness of these kids and giving it them a chance to talk about what it means to be trans, but what it feels like also to be a person and a human in this, like, in this moment. I feel like they never get to do that, to express their own humanity. I wanted to give them the chance to.
Reading excerpts of your book felt cinematic. Portraits of the lives of trans youth being impacted by anti-trans legislation. You've written for so many publications. Why shift mediums and pursue your own book?
Because honestly, like, opportunities for journalists are shrinking. Like, especially for people like me, I'm good at a particular thing and I don't really have an interest in doing other things. Like, I've gotten pitched, like, a friend once was like, you should write tech reviews for like tech blogs. Like, I have a very particular set of skills that I use to try to advocate for people. And there are just shrinking opportunities for that. Like, I haven't had a full-time job for 3 years. I haven't had like real insurance for 3 years. And I like, it doesn't seem like there's another job on the horizon. Like, I'm out there looking, but it's just not coming, right? So in order to continue to keep doing what I do, I had to find a new way to do it. And that was this book, because it's really the work that I've built my entire career on. Like, I've built my career on telling trans stories, on telling the stories of trans youth particularly, and giving them like a voice in the narrative of their lives. Rather than just like talking about them, I talk to them and I talk to their families about their lives. So for me, you know, it was definitely something, it was a new venture, and that I've never written a book before, but I don't think anybody who is familiar with my work would be at all surprised that I wrote this book.
I want to talk about the process of writing American Teenager. When did you have the initial idea to move forward with your storytelling?
I think I'd always wanted to write something like this. I needed the right time. And I just needed to stop making excuses why I couldn't or shouldn't do it. And I think I finally got to my breaking point in 2021. I talk about it in the book, but Kimberly Shapley, who's Kai Shapley's mom, you might know, they're like advocacy. They're very like out and vocal in terms of advocating for rights for trans kids. Kimberly called me one day on the phone, and she was very, very, very stressed out because her state had recently introduced a bill, not a law. So it did not pass ultimately. But if it did, it would have branded parents of trans kids as child abusers if they allow their kids to transition. And before then, I think I'd always harbored a slightly naive view of these things, because there's this sick part of me that just wants to believe the best in people. And I always thought that if we just educate people, if we just inform them, that that was the barrier here, that they just lack bad information and they need new information. So let's just go out and educate, right? And it's just such a Pollyanna view of what's going on. And I realized what bad faith people were operating under, like these like bad faith assumptions about trans kids and their lives, and also the people who love them, right? And the only way to change that is to then operate under good faith. And it's like, well, great question. How do you do that exactly, right? How do you make people operate under good faith? And the answer is, I don't really know. If I did, we could change a lot of things. But for me, like, getting to that point starts with like doubling down on telling the stories of trans kids themselves, because it's a whole lot harder to dehumanize people when they're human to you, when it feels like you know them, when you know their stories, when you know their parents' stories. So I wanted to present those stories in as deep a manner as possible, to get like sort of as intimate as I could, to go as far down the rabbit hole as I could, because I knew that would not only give readers the chance to just like read their stories and learn about them, but also feel like they really know them, to feel like they're like, these kids are their family members, their friends, or even like they're their own child. Like, I wanted you to feel that reading this book, like that you really know these people, because if you did know these people, you would be a whole lot more likely to advocate for them and to vote for their rights. And we are currently less than a month away from the election, so that is incredibly important right now, to vote for their rights.
The stories in your book are so multifaceted. This book encompasses so many intersections of identity. Was that purposeful?
Yeah, it was very purposeful. And just because I didn't want to, as a writer, tell the same story over and over again 7 times, I felt like that would get really boring. And I was in this queer book club for like 2 years. And I feel like I took a lot of notes on like what worked well and what didn't, right? And the books that seemed to resonate the most with folks were books that were constantly engaging them, right? And surprising them and taking them to new places and going in new directions. Like, I want to go to like seven very different places. It's a book about America, right? And me traveling to all these different states. If I travel to all these states to just tell the same story over and over again, what would even be the point of that? Why am I wasting all that time, right? It had nothing to do necessarily with like trying to like check boxes or something. I think it's important to like be diverse and inclusive, right? These things are like critical, but like, it's not diversity for diversity's sake. It's the diversity is just an interesting story. It just makes for better storytelling. It made this book better. And with that, you know, there were like, it was diversity in a lot of different ways. Like it was geographical diversity. And that like, I knew it was really important to tell a Texas story in this book because of what's going on there. And I love that that family was like a white evangelical or well, Episcopalian evangelical family. So different than your normal evangelical, but I mean, evangelical nonetheless. I loved, you know, getting to show that there are religious folks who are like loving and affirming their kids. And then in Florida, you know, you get a family that's experienced like houselessness and domestic violence and all of these other like challenges, mental health challenges. It was important for me to be able to tell that story, especially in Florida, because of everything that's going on there. You know, the kid, Jack, who was sort of the reason that I went down initially, she had her gender-affirming Medicare or Medicaid taken away through the state's program and had to go without that for 5 months. And you get to see the impact on her. So you get to sort of tell like a nuanced story there that's very different from a story that you've heard about trans kids. But then, you know, we get like a Muslim Pakistani story in Illinois. We get a Japanese Hawaiian family in California here. And it's always just like not only digging into intersections, but just digging into kinds of like stories that you haven't heard before. Narratives that challenge and maybe complicate your own views. As in Illinois, Clint pushes back so much against the idea that he has to be an activist or an advocate because he doesn't want to do it. That's not like his life. And he doesn't really identify with being trans. He identifies with being Muslim. And it's not that there's an issue with being trans. There's not like a conflict there with his faith or something. It's just that he sees himself as a boy and he wants other people to see him as a boy. Like that's his life journey. And I loved giving him this space to express himself in whatever way he wanted to, whatever way made sense to him. Because I feel like sometimes these kids feel like they have to kind of moderate themselves or like hold back a bit because they're worried about saying the wrong thing. But for Clint, I just wanted to be like, say what's ever on your mind, say what you feel, say what you think, because I know that there are going to be kids who resonate with that. Like there are going to be kids who look at you and say, thank you for saying that, because that's how I feel too. And then in Kylie in California, I love that it wasn't just about telling a Japanese Hawaiian story. It was this girl who's just so incredibly her own person. And I think I sometimes talk inartfully about this because, you know, I say in the book that her mom sometimes describes her as like a little spoiled or perhaps a little on the quote unquote bratty side. And I actually, for me, that's kind of a backhanded compliment. Like I love the way that Charlie XCX has reclaimed the word brat to be like a woman who just like does what she wants without like regard for other people, who just is like living her own life the way she wants it. And that's Kylie. You know, she doesn't want to be seen as like a trans person necessarily. She just wants to be this like fabulous, like makeup artist, like beauty influencer who's out living an awesome life. And isn't that what we want for these kids? Don't we just want them to have great lives? And getting to hear them say this and to hear them challenge all of us to rethink how we look at them is just such a beautiful thing to be able to give them. I'm so glad that I got to give them this gift and that they got to give it to me in return. Like, I feel so grateful to have been entrusted with all this.
If there is anything readers can take away from American Teenager, what would that be?
We have an election coming up in less than a month. Like, these kids' rights are going to be on the ballot. So if you care about these kids, if you care about what happens to them, if you care about them growing up to have nice, lovely lives, then you'll vote like it. Like, it's not a surprise. I don't think I should have to tell you who I'm advocating for. But, you know, let's be clear here. One of the candidates has floated a national ban on trans youth healthcare. His running mate has personally fought to criminalize doctors who provide gender-affirming care as a member of Congress. That same presidential candidate, the last time he was in office, was responsible for more than 200 attacks on the LGBTQ plus community. And if you think he wouldn't do it again, I've got a bridge to sell you, right? Like, we, all of us, have a say in these kids' lives. We have a say in creating the kind of America that supports them and loves them and affirms them. And we clearly need to do a better job of that because we've elected legislatures in all these different states that are not doing that. And we've elected them again and again. When they pass these anti-trans bills, we've given them their jobs back, right? We haven't looked at this as being like a fireable offense to pass legislation that causes kids to question whether they still want to be alive. And we need to do more, like as allies, to stand up for these kids. So that's voting. That's voting down ballot. That's voting in school board elections, local elections, state elections, wherever you can. And then on top of it, get involved in your communities. Like ask what you can do to support local LGBT centers. Like they are always strapped for cash. They always need volunteers. They always need advocates and allies in any way they can. So step up and do that. I think we keep passing the buck off on other people and we keep passing the buck off on these kids. But these kids are exhausted. They shouldn't have to do this. They're 15 and 16 and 17. They should be doing that. They shouldn't be worried about all this. And if we want to make that easier, if we want to take that burden off of them, we need to carry some of the weight ourselves. We need to ask what we can do. I know that buying this book is a start. We've got to go so much further than that. This book is just the beginning. These kids need so much that they're not getting from us. And it's time for us, all of us, to step up.
Thank you to Nico Lang for their time. You can find their new book online and in bookstores now. Nico is currently on a book tour for American Teenager. You can find out more about the tour and Nico's work on social media at Queer News Daily on Instagram. With This Way Out, I'm Daniel Wasillas. Take care.
Are bars glorified in LGBTQ+ culture?
I've kind of compared them to community centers, churches, meeting halls, all rolled up into one, because so much of our history is wrapped around the bar scene.
The Gay Barchives is an exhaustive history of one of the cornerstones of the queer rights movement, full of personal recollections. Author Daniel M. Jaffe found in the bars a cathartic gateway.
The way I think of it is my first experience at a gay bar as I slept with two hairy beasts.
Curator Art Smith takes David Hunt on a crawl through the Gay Barchives next time on This Way Out. Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by John Dyer V and Ava Davis and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was Daniel Luisius. You heard music by Asia, Blue Dot Sessions, and Ethel Kane. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Hal Myers of Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KICI Iowa City, Iowa, WWSX Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, 3UGE Alexandria, Victoria, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.